good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C., here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Kind of a chilly day here in Washington. Kind of wish it would get so cold that it would kill all the terrible poisons and diseases and viruses that have infected this city, particularly here on Capitol Hill where I live. Folks, I wish I would have been tuned into RBN myself during the last hour or so, because I understand our man John Stadtmiller had a very interesting guest, Andreas von Bülow, the German who has raised questions, shall we say, about the official U.S. version of what happened on 9-1-1. I'm going to be checking that out on the archives tomorrow when I get down to the Office of American Free Press, where we have technology that I don't have on my home computer. That's something that's very important about the Republic Broadcasting Network, ladies and gentlemen, the fact that these archives are up here. You know, friends of mine who tell me they are not home in time to tune into my show or to other shows here on the Republic Broadcasting Network can go to the archives at any time on the internet and listen to the programs at any time, day or night. And it's absolutely free. So sometimes when I want to check out a previous program of my own, all I have to do is just get on the internet and play it, and it doesn't cost me a dime. Just very simple pressing of a few buttons. And, you know, that's a great way to promote the programming here on RBN, because, you know, if your friends don't have the time to tune in, you know, you can always say to them, hey, send them the contact information for rbnlive.com and tell them they can always plug into the archives and find out what they missed, you know, because there's no better way to do it. They can do it at their leisure. They can take an hour at work when nobody's looking or listening, you know, or maybe in the middle of the night when they can't sleep, you know. But that's just one great way to promote RBN, because, you know, there is a lot of good programming here, and I'd like to think that I contribute a little bit to it. RBN's been around a lot longer than I've been broadcasting, and I'm only broadcasting thanks to RBN. You know, over the years, I've done hundreds of radio shows all over the United States as a guest, but this is the first time, of course, you know, since February 1st, anyway, that I've been broadcasting on my own. It's been an interesting experience, you know, because you get to hear a lot of different viewpoints from all over the country, and it's always very, very interesting to see what people have to say about what you have to say. That is, you in this case, meaning me, the host. And speaking of which, I think since John had the show earlier, John Stadtmiller had the show earlier about the 9-1-1 conspiracy, what I'd like to do here this program tonight is, if you don't mind, the listeners, if you don't mind, devote the whole show to the issue of the John F. Kennedy assassination. An overworked topic, needless to say. It came up in one of our programs here the other night, thanks to a call from, I believe, Jeff from Massachusetts, or at least he was involved in the discussion, and I received an interesting email in response to our discussion, and I'll get into that later after the break. But what I'm asking for tonight is for you to focus on the Kennedy assassination, because, you know, it is a subject of enduring interest. I've written a book on the subject. Some of you've read it. Some of you haven't. Some of you never will. Doesn't really matter, because everybody has differing opinions about it, and I'd like to discuss that subject, because I know you do have some differing opinions about it. Differing opinions from my views and probably from many of the listeners as well. Now, our call-in number here is 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. Here comes a break, ladies and gentlemen. Start thinking about the Kennedy assassination. I want to keep the discussion focused on that tonight, folks. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C., here on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of Choice Garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
Rubbing a well for the Republic Trading Group, renowned investor Jimmy Rogers recently stated that with the boom in raw materials prices, it will drive gold to a record $1,000 an ounce. Now is the time for you to take advantage of the offer from Republic Trading Group. For a limited time, we have on offer the most recognized gold coin used as a medium of exchange for over 500 years, the British Sovereign. Each gold British Sovereign features the bust of King George V. The reverse of the coin is the mythical St. George slaying the dragon design. We feel the British Sovereign is a great gold buy, trading at small premiums over their gold content alone when compared to U.S. gold of the same era. Call Republic Trading Group and secure these while stocks last. Call 1-800-691-7898 or order online by going to our website at republictradinggroup.com.
Available from the Republic Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting Network. Broadcasting.
Now you have the time to review every spoken word
on any RBN program
by ordering CDs of any broadcast in either standard audio or MP3 format. Audio CDs are just $10 per hour,
$15 for 2 hours,
and $7 when you order 3 or more hours. An entire month of your favorite broadcaster in MP3 format for just $20. So order right, Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. That address again is Republic Broadcasting, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Or for more information, call 1-800-724-2719.
And on the web at rbnlive.com.
Order your CDs today because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I mentioned at the beginning of the hour here that I wanted to talk about the JFK assassination this entire hour because it is a subject of enduring interest, and it came up on the 24th. I guess that was Monday night. Jeff from Massachusetts, and Jeff, you're a regular caller. I'm not going to ban you from the show. I know you're banned from a lot of shows, but you haven't been banned from mine yet. But if you could hold off calling in, let's leave the air open for others to call in. Well, Jeff did call in the other night and mentioned that he believed that JFK was murdered by his chauffeur, a guy by the name of William Greer, incidentally. And he cited William Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse. Mr. Cooper is now deceased. Well, I dismissed the idea that JFK's chauffeur killed him. Now, you know, I know some very nice people, including my friend Paul Tepetti, who I interviewed here on this program, who truly believe that the chauffeur killed John F. Kennedy. Well, you know, I dismissed that idea, and I got an email from a gentleman, just got it today, although I think he sent it on Tuesday. He writes, referring to the call, he says, there was a caller yesterday that cited William Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse. As was noted by the caller, it's Mr. Cooper's belief that the driver of the vehicle that JFK was in murdered him. You replied with great skepticism and noted that you had seen the videos. I'd like to know just what videos you were looking at. I'm guessing it wasn't the Zapruder film. Well, yes, it was the Zapruder film that I was looking at. I've seen the Zapruder film in many versions, including William Cooper's version. He goes on to say the officially released video didn't catch the driver. Do you think that is a mere coincidence? Well, he goes on to say, I suggest you look at the Zapruder film and watch the driver carefully. It's not a flash on the top of the bald spot on the gentleman in the passenger side, but look between them. You will see the driver look back extensively, and you will see that only his left arm is holding the steering wheel, and something comes between the two people in front that looks much like a gun. You can see the hand definitively. Just play the Zapruder film over a few times. Well, I have played the Zapruder film over a few times. I've received emails with that Zapruder film in which say, look, watch for the gun in the hand of the chauffeur. I still don't believe it. I never believed it. I still don't believe it. William Cooper's former associate, Lars Hansen, who helped prepare that video and who I believe was the original narrator of the video that that William Cooper distributed, has repudiated the video. He says he was taken in by it. He doesn't believe it himself. Now, that's William Cooper's associate whose voice was on the video. He doesn't believe it, folks, okay? And another of Bill Cooper's associates, John Lear, who I've had some very, very friendly contact with. I can't speak for John, but I'm pretty certain that John doesn't believe it either. Got a very nice email from John a couple years ago, and let's put it this way, he likes my book very, very much. But, you know, we're not here really necessarily talking about my book per se, which does happen to be in the Kennedy assassination. Well, my correspondent, responding to my criticisms of the Cooper theory, says you gave the caller the benefit of the doubt and gave a hypothetical situation with regard to the possibility the Secret Service driver had, in fact, killed JFK. You rather insulted the caller by assuming it was an act of jealousy that perhaps JFK stole his girlfriend and other preposterous suggestions to an issue that someone was trying to take seriously. Well, yes, I did say, I said, why would the driver kill JFK? And as I said, if the driver was, in fact, the assassin, isn't it likely, I said, that he was working for somebody else? And I asked the caller, Jeff from Massachusetts, well, who was the assassin? Well, I did comment. My letter writer says, on top of that, you audaciously talked about how the theory was in your mind an attempt to distract people from the message in your book. In doing so, not only did you make yourself out to look like a conceited and pompous blank, 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 gloating about your little book you wrote, but you insulted Mr. Cooper in doing so. My point is this. It's not necessarily to distract attention from my book, but this theory has often been introduced in what I consider to be otherwise serious discussions of the JFK assassination. Not just my book. That theory was being introduced long before I ever wrote a book, and I thought it was a preposterous theory then, and I think it's a preposterous theory now. And my book is not little, by the way. It's 768 pages. And I didn't insult Mr. Cooper. And he says I insulted a dead man, and I disrespect you for that. Well, no, I just don't take Mr. Cooper's theory seriously. He goes on to say that William Cooper was ex-naval intelligence, so how preposterous is it to think that the driver killed JFK? Well, I know a lot of people in intelligence who are out there spreading disinformation, so the fact that Mr. Cooper happened to be naval intelligence doesn't necessarily prove that he has any inside information on anything, and it could have instead suggested maybe he was deliberately putting out disinformation. So you got to look at it from both sides. He says, in answer to your question, Mr. Cooper's belief was that the Secret Service man killed JFK because Mr. Kennedy had planned to expose the Illuminati to the public. He says, now you're likely to dismiss this entire email and this next bit of information because, like many, you have been mentally conditioned to discount anything that contrasts the normality of daily life. But I will tell you anyway because it's important for people to learn the truth. Now, I find this amazing that this person says that I discount anything that contrasts the normality of daily life because virtually everything that I write contrasts the normality of what appears in the mainstream media. He goes on to say JFK wanted to expose how the government dealt with and concealed the presence of aliens on Earth and how George Bush Sr. had begun smuggling drugs into our country. This is all discussed in Cooper's book, he goes on to say. Well, yes, I did read the book, and I read it years ago. I dismissed a lot of the things that he said about the JFK assassination, and I do now. I don't believe the caller killed JFK, or the caller. I don't believe that the chauffeur did kill JFK, but if there's anyone who wants to convince me of it and prove it right here, other than by citing William Cooper, I invite you up to do it. And any other comments you want to make on the JFK assassination, please do. Let's get it all out on the table. Let's hear all the theories, and I'll discuss them as best I can. Let's go to Brian from Pennsylvania before we go to the break. Brian, come on up.
Hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I understand you're a Pennsylvanian.
Yeah, originally. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm
well,
a DC
I just wondered,
man,
Mike,
now,
if you had come across Joan Mellon's book, A Farewell to Justice.
Yes, I have. It's a very good book, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that you had read that, and particularly, I wondered if you had paid any attention to Thomas Edward Beckman, who played a prominent role in the whole assassination.
Yes, just Brian, for the benefit of the listeners, because, you know, you and I know what this book is about. Let me explain to the listeners who don't, you know, I don't want to play an insider's game here and confuse the heck out of everybody. Joan Mellon is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania who's written this book, and what is it, Farewell to Justice.
Correct.
That is an account of Jim Garrison's investigation into Clay Shaw, Guy Bannister, David Ferry, all those people in New Orleans who have been implicated in a lot of places by a lot of writers in the circumstances surrounding the JFK assassination. Joan Mellon says that Jim Garrison was right. There's a lot of people who investigated the JFK assassination who don't like Jim Garrison. I happen to like Jim Garrison. I think he was on the right track.
Yeah,
in
Mike,
that book, in that book, she talks about someone named Thomas Beckham, and she suggests that he may have been an alternative patsy in the assassination conspiracy.
Yeah, so, that and a lot more. But I wanted to mention that about maybe six issues ago in the Nation magazine, they had an article by Max Holland.
Right.
Who I discovered was a contributing editor to that magazine that was very critical of Ms. Mellon and the whole assassination theory. And I was furious that the Nation had Joan Mellon as a contributing editor and
Max Holland.
Steps.
Yeah.
But, your book's right on target. I think the whole thing goes to Permadex and CMC and Montreal, if you know who I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
You're right on the money with your book, and everybody, every classroom in America should read your book. And as far as I'm concerned, Jim Garrison, Henry Ford, and Gerald Lundberg are the three most patriotic Americans of this century.
Well, that's saying a lot because they were pretty towering figures each in their own way. So, yeah, that's true. And I think, you know, as far as Jim Garrison is concerned, after I had written my book, and of course my book contends that the Mossad, Israel's intelligence agency, the Mossad was a key player in the assassination. Not that it was, you know, not that everybody in Dallas firing those guns was a member of the Mossad, because I don't believe that. I don't think there was a single Jew or a single Israeli firing a gun at John F. Kennedy, okay? But I think the Mossad was a prime instigator behind the assassination.
Well, my view is that somebody had to finance this thing.
Yeah, but what I want to emphasize is the fact that Jim Garrison, and I didn't find this out till after I had first published the book, Jim Garrison himself, if A.J. Weberman, one of the leading researchers on the JFK assassination, be believed, he said that Garrison was privately circulating a manuscript that said the Mossad did it. Okay, we have to go to a break. Brian, if you want to hang on, feel free to do so. We'll be back in a minute or two here. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We have a couple more callers, and we're discussing the JFK assassination, a perennial favorite. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Or click on our banner at RBNLive.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The future of health and wellness is here in a great-tasting functional beverage. What is Zango? Zango harnesses the real power of the Garcinia mangostana, also known as mangosteen fruit. Zango is the only product to use the whole mangosteen fruit in a patented formulation and contains more xanthones than any other product on Earth. Studies are showing that xanthones have positive effects on nearly all of the body's systems, from increased energy to protection from free radical damage. Xanthones deliver a wide range of benefits. Not only is Zango mangosteen extremely healthy, it's also fat-free. Zango is 100% natural. Zango has no artificial colors and no added sweeteners. To learn more about this absolutely amazing health beverage and how it can have a positive impact on your health, or to learn how to become a distributor, please call 1-800-764-8514. That's 1-800-764-8514. Call today.
Get a pen and paper ready for emergency storable food information. The attention of the nation is focusing on families storing emergency food in their homes. FEMA has recently proven that their fears of being unable to care for large numbers of people are justified. Hurricane relief in the South was a disaster. The system for tracking all food is now in place. There are numbered stickers on produce, grocery store ID cards track purchases, and now veterinarians will police the permitting and tagging of all livestock food production. The need to prepare has gone from a walk to a full-blown race. Major churches are telling their members, get food now. You'll never have to stand in a bread line if you have your own bread. For help with food supplies, call the J. Michael Stevens Group at 800-409-5633. That's 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. That's efoodsdirect.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington, D.C. That's the city where John F. Kennedy is buried. That is, at least in Arlington, Virginia, right outside Washington. Of course, that's what we're discussing here tonight, John F. Kennedy's assassination. We have Brian from Pennsylvania on the line. Talking to Brian, I was just commenting that Jim Garrison, who's the subject of this new book, A Farewell to Justice by Joan Mellon, Jim Garrison himself had apparently privately come to the conclusion that Israeli intelligence did in fact play a hand in the Kennedy assassination, but obviously that was not something that he wanted to stick his neck out on. He'd already taken enough grief, I guess, on daring to even say the CIA had did it. So I understand where Garrison was coming from. Brian, did you have any further comments?
Not really, Mike. Great show. I think that the Warren Commission was simply a work of fantasy and literary imagination. I wish your show was 2 hours long.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't say that.
I know you hate to hear that. Now it's time for someone else.
Okay, Brian, thanks for your call. Okay, well, that was a friendly call. I'm hoping someone's going to get up here and start chewing me out for saying the chauffeur didn't do it. Maybe Ray from Michigan is going to do that. Ray, come on up.
It's great to talk to you. Hey, and I did enjoy your book on High Priests of War.
All right, I appreciate that.
I passed that on to my brother. Anyway, there's always been one question that bugged me. I'm a retired state policeman.
Okay.
And when the Kennedy all the literature started coming out on that, they indicated that at the last moment there was a change of route in his travel there in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you tell me whether that's accurate or not?
Yes, in fact, that is the case. You know, they had the Kennedy said, you know, it'd be better if we had a map here in front of us, but unfortunately we don't. So try to make this as simple as possible, Ray. Originally, the Kennedy limousine was supposed to go straight through Dealey Plaza. Well, shortly before the assassination, I forget the exact time frame, but very, very shortly before, they rerouted the limousine to make a hard turn to the right and then go down a block or two and then make a hard turn to the left. And that hard turn to the left was actually in violation of Secret Service rules. They had specific rules about the sharp turns whenever there was a presidential motorcade. And although they could have shot President Kennedy if he had gone straight, the way the limousine was then recharted to go down past the Texas School Book Depository and what they call the Grassy Knoll and all these other buildings where they believe assassins may have been, that was, as I say, in violation of the official Secret Service rules, and it put the president right in what Craig Roberts has called the kill zone, and that it was a perfect setup for a sniper attack.
Who would have ordered that, Mike?
Well, that's very interesting because I'll tell you what, this is something that I've added to my book based upon some very interesting information that was provided to me out of Dallas, anonymously, I might add. The people who had taken command of the president's scheduling in Dallas were a group of powerful businessmen. Now, everybody likes to say they were John Birchers and oil men and so forth, but actually there was a council in Dallas that was actually dominated by several businessmen who were actually big supporters of Israel, and they had a guy named Mr. Bloom, who was a former president of one of the synagogues down there, who was in charge of the arrangements. In fact, they took it out of the hands of the Democratic National Committee, and Sam Bloom, as I say in my book, he was probably one of the least known but most pivotal figures in world history. He's the one who rearranged the plans for the Kennedy trip in Dallas, and he's the one who leaked the parade route to the newspapers against the Secret Service rules and so forth. So in fact, one of the big men in Dallas, you know, everybody thinks that it was H.L. Hunt, you know, and these Anglo-Saxon Protestant oil men who really ran Dallas. That's not the case at all. That's an old myth. That's something right out of Hollywood, you know, the story of J.R. Ewing and all this stuff. No, it was Neiman Marcus, one of the big stores down there. The other gentleman, his name escapes me at the moment, but he was one of the Dallas distributors of the Bronfman family Seagram's products. His name is Julius Sheps. He was one of the big men in Dallas who this Mr. Bloom worked for. So actually you find that it was a handful of people with strong interests in Israel who were actually arranging that down there. And you know what? Mr. Bruno, Jerry Bruno, who was JFK's advance man and a loyal member of JFK's inner circle, he says that the trip to Dallas was the first time that he did not prevail in making the arrangements for any of JFK's speaking engagements.
Well, that certainly fortifies your position.
Yeah, well, I didn't know this. This is a funny thing, Ray. The whole time when I was writing Final Judgment, and all the 10 years the book had been out, I never knew those details, but I know them now, and like you say, it does fortify it.
I've really been curious.
All right, well,
Thanks, I hope
I answered the question, Ray.
I'll get off here
all
and
right.
Let somebody else.
Good out. Talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. More. We got Leo from Texas. Wonder if he's from Dallas. He'll be up after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners to the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains invaluable information, carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercials and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each CD targets a specific subject matter. For example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people as you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
Robbie Noel for the Republic Trading Group. Renowned investor Jimmy Rogers recently stated that with the boom in raw materials prices, it will drive gold to a record $1,000 an ounce. Now is the time for you to take advantage of the offer from Republic Trading Group. For a limited time, we have on offer the most recognized gold coin used as a medium of exchange for over 500 years, the British Sovereign. Each gold British sovereign features the bust of King George V. The reverse of the coin is the mythical St. George slaying the dragon design. We feel the British sovereign is a great gold buy, trading at small premiums over their gold content alone when compared to U.S. gold of the same era. Call Republic Trading Group and secure these while stocks last. Call 1-800-691-7898. Or order online by going to our website at republictradinggroup.com.
As a listener of this network, you know that we bring you the news and analysis that you just won't get from the corporate-dominated media outlets in this country. As an educated citizen, you also know that freedom itself is not free, but requires constant vigilance and sacrifice. A radio network such as Republic Broadcasting Network, a rare commodity indeed, also cannot survive on good intentions alone. So the next time you think about going down to the local superstore or electronics store, stop, get online first, and visit RepublicTradingPost.com. We have thousands of items at very competitive prices, and every dollar you spend with us will be invested back into RBN. So that we may continue to bring you the news and information the public so desperately needs. RepublicTradingPost.com, the store that invests its profits in your freedom.
Okay, folks, this is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Washington here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're focusing tonight on the topic of the JFK assassination. And, you know, we've got two callers from Texas and one from Oklahoma. They're all in the region. Let's just go ahead and bring them up and see what they have to say. Our first caller is Leo, and apparently he's from Austin. He's not from Dallas. Leo, come on up.
Hello, thank you, Michael.
How you doing tonight?
Good, and you?
I'm doing it. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm doing it. What do you have to say about the JFK?
Well, first of all, great job. I appreciate your program. Even though I'm in Austin, yes, I was in Dallas that day. I was in junior high school.
Okay.
And I will always remember that when the radio was being played on the intercom and the announcement of the death came out, that cheers erupted throughout my classroom and throughout the hall, and I will always remember that that is my hometown, and that's the way they fought.
Uh-huh,
so it's,
yeah.
It's extremely bitter. My question to you has to do with something that seems minute, but it's always made me very, very curious. Back in the 70s, I read several books and finally got frustrated and stopped reading books on JFK. I wonder what your thoughts are on the role of Officer Tippit and what was really going on there. Was he part of the setup? Just what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, situation? Well, I tell you what, you know, that's a good question. It's, you know, it's something that I must mention this, that when I wrote my book on the when I originally wrote my book, and even to the new edition to this day, I actually say very little about Officer Tippett, largely because I've never completely made up my mind as to what really happened, and I don't think we're ever really going to know exactly what happened. That having been said, my basic guess is that Officer Tippett was probably being manipulated. He may have been told that he was going to maybe become a hero, that they were going to he was tricked into involvement in the assassination without knowing that the assassination was going to take place. And
it's just quite a mystery. I know in one of those many books, I just thought I read a paragraph how a lot of cash was found in his trunk of his police car. But I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, I don't remember that. It's very, very possible that that's true. And it's if true, it's very, very likely that someone has written that. But then, of course, you know, there is so much out there. In my process of reading about the JFK assassination over the years, I don't want to get off the subject of Officer Tippett, but I'm going to digress for a moment.
Sure.
What I've found is that a lot of people have a tendency, writers and people otherwise talking about it, what has happened is that there have been the early writers wrote books on the subject, and then subsequent writers would pick up material from those books and then inaccurately render it in their own writings, and then other writers would pick up on that and cite the original writer, but actually misquoting them because they just didn't do it right. But anyway, as far as Officer Tippett is concerned, I would say that he probably was roped into something that he didn't. I don't think he knew that President Kennedy was going to be assassinated. In any conspiracy of that type, you want to keep it very compartmentalized and not let everybody know what's going on.
Sure.
And then he probably, after it happened, he probably realized that he was caught in the middle of it. He may have objected. He didn't go along with the deal, and then he was shot. Now, see, that raises the question, did Lee Harvey Oswald shoot him or did somebody else?
Right.
I've seen a lot of convincing evidence to suggest that it was not Lee Harvey Oswald who killed Officer Tippett.
Right,
on the other hand,
you wonder why.
Yeah, on the other hand, there's the other side of it, too, that even if Lee Harvey Oswald was innocent of killing the president, which I believe that he was innocent of firing a weapon, it's obvious that he knew that he was slated to be the patsy.
Sure.
And he may have, in fact, shot Officer Tippett as a natural instinct. He was trying to escape. You know, he was like a cornered animal, and he may have shot Officer Tippett as a consequence of that. So,
okay.
So like I say, I really don't know, and I think that's probably one of the real mysteries. You know, in the details of what actually happened. See, and this is a very important point. Vincent Salandria, one of the early researchers, who's one of the real philosophers, I think, of the assassination research. He said some years ago that for so many years, people focused so much on how the crime was committed. You know, where the bullets were fired from,
right.
Who fired the bullets. No one focused enough on why Kennedy was killed.
Exactly.
And that's what my book does, and that's what I encourage people to do. So.
Well, thanks for taking my call, and let me move on and let you get somebody
else. All right,
I
appreciate that call. Good call, Leon. It gives me something to think about. And in answer to a question I have from my producer, the answer is yay. In the meantime, let's go to Dan from Oklahoma. Dan, what do you think about the JFK assassination?
Hi, Mike. Are you there?
How you doing? I'm here.
I like your book very much, but it's not balanced in the sense that it focuses too much on one element of the assassination.
Well, let me answer that.
No, I don't want to attack you. But
I didn't say you were, but let me answer that. The reason why the book is balanced in that one direction is the simple reason that direction has never been focused upon.
I'm fully aware of that.
Okay, well, I want to emphasize.
Two other books I'd like to recommend to your listening audience. One is Peter Dale Scott's Deep Politics.
And I think that's a very good book up
yeah.
to a point.
In that, he says the key to the assassination is Jack Ruby. Because in Jack Ruby is the one time the conspiracy had to come out of hiding in order to continue with the assassination and not get caught, that is, to kill Oswald.
Okay.
I walked, the other is Gayton Fonzie's book, The Last Investigation, which is a great account of how the House investigation got derailed.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on both books.
Now, I went down to Dallas, walked around Dealey Plaza, and followed also the route of Oswald from his rooming home to the Texas Theater. One of the things that I noticed, the most obvious thing from Dealey Plaza, is that the Texas School Book Depository window where Oswald was supposed to have fired from is an extremely difficult shot, not only because of the trees which have since grown up there, but it's just a bad angle.
Right, absolutely.
The perfect shot is from the third or fourth floor of the Daltex building. It's perfect if you stand at the X, the spot where Kennedy was actually shot, and run a trajectory back. You'll see that the drop of the road and the angle of the shot is almost parallel.
Okay, now I tell you what. Before you go any further, let me. I'm going to read to you from the latest edition of Final Judgment, which I'd be willing to bet you don't have.
No.
And this is about.
I've got three of them.
Okay, well, this is the sixth edition, part two. Now listen to this. You talk about the Daltex building being a likely place of a shot being fired. I agree with you 100%. Now, let me tell you about the Daltex building, according to my sources in Dallas. It was co-owned by David Weisblatt, a major financial backer of the Israeli lobby's Anti-Defamation League. And in that building on different floors, there were a number of firms that utilized the telephone number of Morty Friedman. Now, what's interesting is Friedman was a garment manufacturer, and one of his partners was Abe Zapruder, who took the famous film of the assassination.
Right.
What's even more interesting about Friedman is that one firm in the Daltex building that was linked to Friedman was the Dallas Uranium and Oil Company. Now, why that's interesting in the context of my book is that JFK was working to stop Israel's nuclear arms program, and that arms program was dependent on smuggled uranium from U.S. sources. So,
if you want to
look at the Daltex building as a possible source of an assassin's bullet, you can't get away from a very distinct Israeli connection. And you know, I'll tell you something else about Peter Dale Scott, and as I say, I think it's a good book, very good book, but. My problem with Peter Dale Scott is that in so many instances, I always say he kind of walks up to the door of the Mossad and then never knocks.
Well, no kidding.
Well, yeah, but that's the point. Why does he do that? See, I think that's a problem. And you know, Penn Jones from down there in Texas was like one of the grand old men of the JFK assassination researchers. And in his Midlothian Mirror column of January 18, 1968, he says, Jack Ruby was a close intimate of the members of the Dallas Police Force and other United States law enforcement agencies, as well as the Israeli Counterintelligence Organization. Identifying Ruby as being involved with the Israeli intelligence opens up a completely overlooked area concerning the assassination of JFK. So here's old Penn Jones, having written this back in 1968, and then it was published in his volume 3 of his book, Forgive My Grief. So yes, I do agree Jack Ruby is very, very important to that. And in Final Judgment, I have added in a later edition substantial material linking Ruby to Israeli arms smuggling. And what's also not very well known is that Texas was a major conduit for arms smuggling to Israel going back to the 1940s, even before the state of Israel was established. In fact, a lot of people don't know that Jonathan Pollard, the spy for Israel, was raised in Galveston, Texas, and he was inspired toward his support for Israel, according to his own court papers, by having seen all this arms smuggling going on. And I tell you what, another point about Jack Ruby that's kind of interesting. You know, he came to Dallas in 1947. And he had been an aircraft mechanic into service a couple years previously. Well, according to the official history of the Sonneborn Institute, which was an American conduit for arms smuggling to Israel, aircraft parts were one of the primary components being smuggled out of Texas in the late 1940s to Israel. So my personal belief is, and this is something I'm never going to be able to prove, and no one's ever going to be able to disprove. But I do believe that the reason why Jack Ruby went to Dallas was not because he may have had some nightclub interests there, but he didn't go there as a representative of Chicago organized crime. He went there for the purpose of engaging in the arms smuggling. But there's even a caveat to that. And as I pointed out here in a discussion the other evening, the truth is that even Chicago organized crime was not really run by the Italian-American mafia. The real boss of Chicago organized crime in that time frame was a guy named Hyman Lerner, a partner of Meyer Lansky, and they were actively involved in smuggling arms to Israel. So, it all comes back to these Israeli connections that no one ever talks about.
Can I make one last comment,
please,
Mike?
Please go ahead. Yeah, I dominated this, but
that's all good. That's new information for
me. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I walked the course that Oswald, from Oswald's rooming house to the Texas Theater, and the site of Officer Tippett's car was four or five blocks out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So if what Oswald did was go to his rooming house, make a telephone call to meet someone who was going to help him get out of his situation in the Texas theater, he to walk straight there. Now, of course, he might have tried to, you know, walk a circuitous route in order not to be tailed or found. But if he was walking a direct route, he would not have walked past where officers Tippett's car was.
That's very interesting in itself. Yes, that's you see that whole aspect, you know, that whole aspect of what happened there, you know, there's so many contradictory stories, but you know, it's probably again indicative of the fact that if you look at the way the Warren Commission treated so many aspects of the JFK assassination, they never told the straight truth about anything, whether it was the shooting of Officer Tippett or whether it was what Oswald was doing in New Orleans or what he was doing in Dallas. So,
there were no powder burns on his hands or face. So,
isn't that
it's
interesting?
Generally believed that he didn't fire a gun that day.
That's right. You know, and see, I'm pretty much convinced that that was him standing in front of the Texas School Book Depository at the time of the assassination.
Well, I don't know about that. One final thing: implausible denial of Mark Lane. He reports a very interesting debate he had with A.L. Wearin in Beverly Hills High School,
mm-hmm.
I think, auditorium, where A.L. Wearin defends the Warren report thusly. He says, "God bless Earl Warren. He prevented a pogrom in this country." Now, I'll leave you with that, Mike. Thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
All right, bye. Jan. Thanks for calling. Okay, we almost lost Jerry from Texas, but Jerry's back, so let's bring Jerry up. Jerry.
Yeah, it's not Jerry, it's Terry.
It's, what is it?
Terry.
Terry from Texas. Okay, Terry with a T as in Texas. Okay, Terry.
That is correct. Interesting sidebar. I was talking to somebody the other day. This was last year about 9/11 being an inside job. And then we started talking about JFK, and, you know, of course, that obviously there was foreknowledge, and there's no way that this guy could have got off all these shots with the bolt-action rifle. It's just impossible.
Right.
So I started mentioning this to this friend of mine, and I, lo and behold, he mentioned that his father was part of the Honor Guard.
Okay.
And down here in Austin, Texas. And he was, you know, he would get ready for whenever Kennedy or Johnson would come to Austin. And Johnson, as vice president, would come to Austin pretty often. And they were supposed to get ready. You know, they were supposed to have all the spit and polish, and they were supposed to have, you know, have their dress on, and they were called ahead of time. And they were forewarned with lots of, you know, plenty of preemptive time to let them know that, hey, you know, the president or vice president is going to show up. And so he had gone through this routine many times with Johnson coming, because Johnson had his ranch just south of Austin. So he was very, you know, skilled or drilled on the routine.
Okay.
And he was part of the Honor Guard. See, right after Dallas, Kennedy was supposed to come to Austin. And he was mentioning to this buddy of mine, his son, this friend of mine, that that day, they never even, you know, they would get calls. They were supposed to be ahead, even though he wasn't going to come to Austin till later on that day. They were supposed to be all, you know, dressed up and have everything ready to go. They never got a call that day, never.
See, those are those little kind of details that, you know, slip through the crack and people don't hear about it unless it's in a private situation like you did. And that is very, very telling because obviously somebody knew that they weren't going to need to be busy that day.
And
those are those kind of things, whether it's the Kennedy assassination or the Oklahoma bombing or 9-1-1, that are very telling.
He said that his dad always found that to be very strange because whenever the vice president showed up, Johnson, they were always ready. They always got calls.
Well, obviously, somebody didn't feel the need that day. Terry, thanks for that call. That's very interesting.
Get a pen and paper ready for emergency storable food information. The attention of the nation is focusing on families storing emergency food in their homes. FEMA has recently proven that their fears of being unable to care for large numbers of people are justified. Hurricane relief in the South was a disaster. The system for tracking all food is now in place. There are numbered stickers on produce, grocery store ID cards track purchases, and now veterinarians will police the permitting and tagging of all livestock food production. The need to prepare has gone from a walk to a full-blown race. Major churches are telling their members, get food now. You'll never have to stand in a bread line if you have your own bread. For help with food supplies, call the J. Michael Stevens Group at 800-409-5633. That's 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. That's efoodsdirect.com.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big-money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Collins Piper wrapping up an hour here. We have another caller from Texas, the state that was supposed to take the rap for the Kennedy assassination. We have Gene calling in. Gene, what do you have to say?
Well, Mark, I have a video where Mark Lane was interviewing Roger Craig.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Roger Craig was made Deputy Sheriff of the Year in 1962. And Roger Craig told Mark Lane that the rifle they found on the sixth floor of the Book Depository building was not an Italian Carcano. It was a German Mauser.
That's right.
And a gunsmith was up there also named Seymour Weissman, who was a gun dealer in Dallas, and he signed an affidavit to the effect that that was a German Mauser they found, not an Italian Carcano. So Oswald's rifle was not found in the 6th floor depository at all.
You're absolutely right about that. That book, that gun, if it was found anywhere, it wasn't found in the so-called sniper's nest.
And all of a sudden, it turned into an Italian Carcano when it got the sheriff's department, and they had gone to Oswald's residence. And they had asked his wife if he had a rifle, and she said yes, and she took him out to the garage, and that's where they got his Italian Carcano rifle.
That's probably a pretty good estimation of what happened. Yeah,
that is what happened.
About it. Yeah, there's no question about it. You're obviously on top of that,
Jim. Oh, yeah, I've done a lot of research on the JFK assassination, and there was a man on the early talk show back in the late 60s, early 70s that had Penn Jones on his program all the time. His name was Lou Staples.
Okay.
And Lou Staples was found dead in a field outside Oklahoma City because he was digging too deep into the JFK assassination, having Penn Jones on all the time.
That's very interesting. Somebody probably contacted him with some information, and then he was probably sitting on the information thinking he was going to, you know, blow the case wide open like Dorothy Kilgallen thought she was going to do. And guess what? She turned up dead, too.
And guess what? Roger Craig turned up dead in 1974.
That's
right. After he did the interview with Mark Lane, he was killed with a shotgun blast to his stomach, yet he never owned a shotgun. But they said it was a suicide, nonetheless. So.
Yeah, that's like Penn Jones documented clearly. A lot of people met some strange deaths because they just happened to see things they weren't supposed to see or hear things they weren't supposed to hear.
The History Channel and the Men Who Killed Kennedy documentary brought this out very well.
Yeah, that's a good primer, I always say, for anyone who wants to get an idea of how much deception there was in the JFK assassination. You know, and I want to say this, you know, despite the title of my own book, Final Judgment, you know, I don't claim to have the final version of what happened. You know, there's a lot more research to be done on the issue, and I encourage people to do it, but I really do strongly suggest people forget about the chauffeur.
How do we get your book, Final Judgment?
What's that?
How do we get your book, Final
Judgment? Well, you can go to AmericanFreePress.net and order it, or call American Free Press at the 800 number. It's, 888-699-NEWS.
All right.
All right, listen, I thank you for your call, Gene. Okay, folks, I enjoyed this program tonight. I wish someone would have called in, though, to tell me where I was wrong about the chauffeur or tell me where I was wrong about anything if anyone read my book. This is an open forum to the extent that I can make it one, and it always will be. I thank you for listening in. I thank you for the intelligent calls, and I invite you back here tomorrow night. Stay tuned to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth, even if the truth hurts sometimes. This is Michael Collins Pfeiffer saying farewell for this Thursday evening. I guess it's Wednesday evening. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. More good programming here.
Everyone agrees our children are the future leaders of this great nation. How can we expect the founding values of our great republic to continue with future generations when these same values are being phased out of the government-run school system? There is a solution. The Little Red Schoolhouse Project, a community-based school system founded by Dr. Jake Wade to provide a biblical and constitutionally-based education for our children. Help us prepare the next generation in our fight for freedom. Ask us how you can help by writing to Providence Christian Academies, 280 Tenney Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616, or by calling 512-398-4833. Once again, that is Providence Christian Academies, 280 Tenney Creek Road, Dale, Texas, 78616. Support your local Little Red Schoolhouse. Call 512-398-4833 and ask how you can help ensure no student is turned away.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.